This episode of Felon may contain disturbing content, including descriptions of violence and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
Please come forward to the police. We as the Liddy families feel frustrated that it hurts us deeply in our hearts that an innocent young woman who had a bright future ahead of her who was taken from us. For the family of Erica, it's been a shock. Not a day goes by without us thinking and not knowing about unanswered questions which we would like them to be filled. We the Liddy families are appealing to the general public and also to the follower on the bicycle who called the ambulance the morning that he found Erica to come forward on any information that may shed a light in assisting the police.
In the still hours before dawn, on a quiet suburban street in Cairns, a young woman was found slumped on a bus stop bench, unconscious, bleeding, and barely alive. Her injuries were brutal. Her attacker had vanished without a trace. No witnesses. No weapon. Just one chilling clue. A brief anonymous phone call made from a nearby payphone. And then silence. Cairns is a regional city in far north Queensland, known for its tropical climate and laid-back atmosphere. It's a hub for tourism, close to the Great Barrier Reef and surrounded by lush rainforest. But beyond the visitor attractions, Cairns is also a working city. With a diverse population, it draws people from remote communities, other parts of Australia, and overseas, some looking for work, others for a fresh start. Like many regional centres, it offers opportunity, but also faces challenges, especially for those without strong support networks. On the 12th of April, 2011, at approximately 3:30 a.m, a call came through to emergency services in Cairns. It was from a public payphone, an increasingly rare fixture in the modern city. The voice on the line was male, urgent but calm. He spoke quickly and quietly. A woman was badly hurt. She was lying at a bus stop on Kamarunga Road in Freshwater, a quiet suburb on the northern edge of town, about 10 kilometres from the city centre.
Gentlemen, what's the town or suburb of the emergency? And what's the exact address of the emergency?
It's at a bus stop. It's at Old Smithfield Road.
Okay, is it?
It's the junction of Freshwater Road and Old Smithfield Road.
Okay, and I just need you to repeat that address for verification, please.
It's the junction of Old Smithfield Road and Freshwater Road, Kamarunga Road.
Okay, and what's the telephone number you're coming? Where are you calling from?
I've just down to a phone box. There's a woman in the bus stop,
without
conscious and she's bleeding.
Okay.
He gave no name, offered no explanation. He didn't stay on the line. Within seconds, the call ended. Paramedics were dispatched immediately. Minutes later, under the glow of a flickering streetlight, they arrived at the scene. Slumped on a bench at the side of the road was a young woman. She was unconscious and barely breathing. Her injuries were severe. She had suffered blunt force trauma to the head, and beneath one of her eyes was a sharp puncture wound, small but deep. There were no witnesses, no bystanders, no signs of a struggle, just the woman, the empty road, and the silence of the early morning. She was treated on scene, then rushed to Cairns Base Hospital. There, she was placed in intensive care. Doctors worked around the clock to manage her injuries, but she never regained consciousness. On the 15th of April, 3 days after she was found, the woman passed away. She was identified as 21-year-old Erica Liddy. Erica had grown up in Cowan, a small and remote Aboriginal community in the Cape York Peninsula of far north Queensland. With a population of only a few hundred people, Cowan is the kind of place where families are deeply connected and people look out for one another. It's a community shaped by resilience, cultural pride, and a deep connection to country. For many young people, it's a safe and familiar environment, but also one where opportunities, particularly for employment or further education, can be limited. Those who knew Erica described her as vibrant and full of life. She had a wide smile and a loud, infectious laugh. She was close to her family, especially her younger cousins, and was known for being kind, funny, and proud of who she was. Her heritage was important to her, and she carried the strength of her community with her. Like many young women from remote towns, Erica had made the move to Cairns in search of a fresh start. With its growing tourism industry, education options, and urban amenities, was a natural step for someone hoping to build a future. But the transition wasn't always easy. At the time of her death, Erica was staying in temporary accommodation, moving between friends' places, sometimes couch surfing, and looking for stable work. She had spoken about finding a job in hospitality, or possibly enrolling in community services training. Despite the challenges, those close to her said she remained optimistic. On the night of April 11th, 2011, Erica was seen at a popular nightclub in the Cairns city centre. She appeared to be in good spirits, chatting with people, enjoying the music. Security footage from the venue showed her leaving alone sometime after midnight. She didn't seem to be distressed or under the influence, and she didn't appear to have arranged a lift or contacted anyone by phone. From that point on, her movements became a mystery. There was no footage showing where she went next. No witnesses reported seeing her after she left the club. She didn't call friends or family. There were no messages or social media updates. It was as if she had simply vanished into the night. By 3:30 a.m., just a few hours later, she would be found critically injured at a bus stop on Kamarunga Road in the quiet suburb of Freshwater, around 10 kilometres from where she was last seen. She had no known connections to the area. She had never mentioned going there, and there was no clear reason why she would have ended up in that location. What happened in those missing hours remained unclear, but what was known is that she had been attacked, struck in the head, and stabbed beneath the eye, and left unconscious in the dark. And the only immediate trace of what had occurred was a short, anonymous phone call to emergency services made from a nearby payphone. Detectives from the Cairns Criminal Investigation Branch began working on the case as soon as Erica was found. From the outset, her injuries and the circumstances of her discovery raised red flags. The blunt force trauma to her head and the stab wound beneath her eye made it clear that her injuries were not accidental. Police were treating the matter as a serious assault. The anonymous call to emergency services added a layer of complexity. The caller had used a public payphone located just a few hundred metres from the bus stop on Kamarunga Road. He gave no name, offered no explanation, and hung up almost immediately. Investigators hoped that perhaps the caller was a witness or passerby who had panicked, but there was also the possibility that he had been involved in the assault. Police released a public appeal for information. They asked anyone who had seen Erica that night, or who may have witnessed activity around the payphone or the bus stop in the early hours of April 12th, to come forward.
Yeah, my name's Kevin Garn. I'm a detective acting inspector and the regional crime coordinator for the Far Northern Region.
The spelling is surname?
It's G-O-A-N.
Just while we're here today,
what's the... investigators asked that we release a copy of the 000 call that relates to the hours leading up to the demise of young Erica Liddy. She was located at a bus stop about 1.7 k's to the northwest of our location here with a head injury. She was taken to the hospital, and as we know, she passed away as a result of her injuries. The hope by releasing the 000 call is that we can identify the caller. We believe that he may have additional information which he can assist our investigations with. It's probably important to pass on to the 000 caller that he is not the subject of our investigations, but we believe that he will have information that may be able to assist us in advancing our inquiries to bring it to a successful resolution for the sake of the families involved.
Do you know anything about the caller?
We understand from his voice that he's probably a middle-aged gentleman. And we understand that he may have been on a push bike in the area of the bus stop at about 1:30 a.m. on the 12th of April this year.
How are inquiries going outside of this building?
Our inquiries are still progressing. We have a number of lines of inquiries, but we're certainly eager to speak to the Triple O caller in this instance.
As I mentioned earlier, weeks earlier, about a group of kids that may be in the area as well. Is there any progress?
A number of inquiries are being conducted in relation to that, but we believe the Triple O caller in this instance may be able to give us significant direction.
And the car as well, the convoy?
Those investigations are continuing.
What did the Triple O caller say?
A copy of the Triple O call will be released to you, but essentially that he had come by the young lady in the bus shelter and that she was suffering from, she was then unconscious, and he was urging the arrival of the emergency services.
What makes you sure that he isn't a suspect?
It's the nature of the call is such that we want to identify who the Triple O caller is so that he can tell us what other things may have transpired in the area at that time.
And so was the man not there by the time police had arrived?
No, that's the case, yes.
Is that unusual?
Not given the proximity of the phone box here to the proximity where Erica was discovered.
But leads were limited. The bus stop was in a quiet residential area with no nearby security cameras. Most homes on Kamarunga Road were set back from the road or surrounded by vegetation, and none had captured any useful footage. Door-to-door inquiries were carried out in the surrounding area. Detectives spoke with residents along Kamarunga Road and the neighbouring streets of Freshwater, asking if anyone had heard a disturbance, seen unusual vehicle activity, or noticed someone on foot during the night. No one reported hearing any screams, voices or vehicles around the time the call was made. Meanwhile, Erica's last known movements were reviewed. CCTV footage from the nightclub she had attended in the city showed her leaving alone just after 1 a.m. She didn't appear intoxicated or agitated. Police checked other available footage from nearby businesses and public transport routes, but there was no indication of how she had travelled the 10 kilometres to Freshwater. Detectives explored the possibility that she had accepted a lift from someone, either a stranger or someone she knew. Taxi companies were contacted, and records from the night of April 11th into the early hours of April 12th were pulled and reviewed. No driver reported picking up anyone matching Erica's description in the relevant time frame, and no trips appeared to have ended in Freshwater. There were no recent reports of threats or disputes involving Erica. Friends and family described her as positive, outgoing, and excited about her future. She had spoken about finding stable housing and pursuing training and community work. She had not mentioned any concerns about her safety or any individuals who worried her. With no apparent motive, no clear suspect, and no eyewitnesses, the investigation faced significant hurdles. Detectives continued to pursue several lines of inquiry, looking at people Erica had recently been in contact with, tracing possible transport routes, and reviewing calls made from nearby public phones, but progress was slow. Her death shocked those who knew her and rattled the wider community. Erica was young, hopeful, and trying to build a new life in Cairns. The idea that she could be harmed so brutally and left alone in a dark suburb with no explanation left both police and the public searching for answers.
Name of the tape, please.
Ed Kinbacker.
Start with Erica, or where you at in that
session? Yes, well, the investigation surrounding the death of Erica Liddy continues. Now, we've established from the course of inquiries that we've got two separate bodies of information. One, that she was seen on the Monday evening of her death at about 9:30 p.m. in the Moorabool area. In fact, a family member interacted with her and spoke to her, and at that stage she was with a group of younger females in the park that is bordered by Long and Shang Street. Now, what we wish to do is identify that particular group of young women she was with. But significantly there was a male with this group who we also wish to identify. This individual is a light-skinned Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander male, and he has dreadlocks. Now, he also is believed to be linked to a green 91-93 Commodore sedan, which Information suggests Erica may have been associated with a number of occasions prior to that date. So what we're interested in doing is identifying the group of women and certainly identifying the male and the potential owner of the green Commodore. The Commodore is an older style vehicle that's certainly in relatively poor condition, and it should be reasonably well known to the people in the Mirabel community, albeit to date with the door knocks we have not been able to substantiate that Erica was in fact with that group or indeed with anyone with a green car. So we're seeking community assistance to identify that particular group she was interacting with and the owner of the vehicle. He may be able to assist us with the investigation.
Has the person who tipped off police come forward at all?
Oh yes, it was a family member who spoke with her there and provided us with the information that she did in fact see her on the Monday night. Now she was found at 1:30 a.m. on the Tuesday. So obviously we've, you know, relatively close to the period of time. But, you know, we've only got a 4-hour gap between when she was in Mirabel and when she was ultimately found on Cameronga Road. So obviously it's a significant part of the investigation. Now also additionally, we have spoken to a person who in fact was with Erica on the Sunday evening, the night prior, and he dropped her into the city area at about 6 p.m. on Sunday night. Now he dropped her in the area of the Spence Sheridan Street intersections. So again, it appears that she's in that area, and we would like anyone who may have interacted with Erica or may have some information in regard to her whereabouts to let us know.
Is it clear of what actually caused her injuries?
No, it's of the nature of a stab type injury, but that's all we can really say. The instrument is possibly, you know, very thin. You know, it's unclear specifically what has caused the injury or how it has been inflicted. You know?
So there's more of a wound rather than a blow. Is what you're
trying to
say?
That's right. Yeah. Yes.
What about the bloke who phoned in finding her at the bus stop? Have you heard
no, that? No, that individual we still wish to identify. We are continuing our efforts to try to identify him. In fact, today we've conducted a further door knock in the area based on some information that he may be a resident of Old Smithfield Road. However, that has not been successful. We continue our requests for that individual to come forward and advise us of what they can tell us in regard to this incident. You know.
How's the family going?
Oh, look, the family's okay. A number of staff will be going to Cohen in the relatively near future. The funeral, as I understand, is this Friday. And obviously there will be a significant family gathering in Cohen, and investigators will be attending to speak with family members to see what further information we can get.
Do you have any idea who the girls might have been that they were with?
At the moment we wish to identify that group of girls. We have conducted extensive inquiries in the Mirabel suburb, in particularly along Long and Chang Street, and have not been able to identify.
So there weren't people she was well known to be friends with?
No, Erica tended to move between groups, and that's one of the difficulties of this investigation. She didn't have a specific tight group of friends. She tended to move between groups of people.
How cooperative are your friends, family and associates?
Oh, look, everyone is cooperating as best they can with the investigation. Certainly, you know, we've spoken to a large number of people, but it's simply that, you know, we are dealing with someone who did move loosely between groups of people, and being relatively new to Cairns, she didn't have a solid friends network who really can provide us with that normal background that someone may be able to speak about their close friends and their close associates. That isn't the situation in this instance.
And this man, why is he important into the investigation? Was he possibly a boyfriend?
No, look, we don't know. All we do know is that there is information that has been cropping up through the investigation of Erica potentially being in a green Commodore, and that the information we've got is that a green Commodore was in the environs of this group and there was a male with the group. So obviously it's a potentially significant bit of information that we'd like to explore.
Is it too hard to tell, or could this have just been an accident that got out of hand, or is it something that you feel might
Well, look, that's the purpose of this investigation, to establish what the circumstances are. You know, we've got an open mind in regard to that. The injury is unusual, and it's not associated with any other injuries. So there could be a range of explanations for it. But certainly the whole nature of this investigation, the whole circumstances, is inherently suspicious, and it's certainly being treated as a murder investigation. And what unfolds is to, you know, as there's the mystery is effectively solved as to how this injury may have been inflicted. Well, we've got to wait and see.
Police said some weeks ago that they didn't believe it was weapons that inflicted this injury. Is that still the case?
Well, we simply don't know. We don't know how this injury has occurred, you know. It's an unusual injury.
You've said before that violence is something that sometimes happens when you live the lifestyle that Erica did. Do you think it's more likely that it was someone that she did associate with, that if it was, as you suspect, an assault that led to a murder? Do you think it's someone that she's more likely to already have known?
Oh, look, it's possible. We simply don't know. It's someone that she could have met that evening. Or alternatively, it could be someone who she has been associated with, for example, a person associated with the Green Commodore, you know, is obviously a person of interest. But it's just speculation until, you know, the full knowledge of her movements on that night are established. Yeah, really, we are in a bit of a holding pattern pending that information coming in.
Just over 5 weeks after Erica Liddy's death, the investigation took a sudden and unexpected turn.
Could you tell us, fill us in on the last 24 hours in regards to the investigation?
Look, yesterday, a 51-year-old male person contacted Cairns CIB and wanted to give some information in relation to this investigation. As a result, detectives from the Cairns CIB and the homicide squad travelled to an address in Coranda where they spoke to this male person. He subsequently made a number of admissions in relation to the murder of Miss Liddy, and as a result he was later charged with murder and is now in custody.
Are you able to say what his connection to her was? Was he a friend, a family member?
No, I can't say at this stage.
Was he the cyclist at all that made the call to Crime Stoppers?
Look, I believe that he has made some admissions in relation to that.
So he was the voice on the end of the line saying, look, there's a girl bleeding at a bus stop.
Look, he made some admissions about making a phone call, so
right, yeah,
that's about all I can tell you at this stage.
What will you be looking for at the... Obviously there's something set up at Coranda. What will you be...
Look, there's a crime scene to process at Coranda, so we'll be working there until that's completed. That's part of our ongoing investigation. The investigation doesn't stop. There's still bits and pieces to be followed up and finalised before the investigation can be considered complete.
And did police probing lead to them finding this alleged offender?
Sorry?
Did your investigations, like your messages being sent out and all of that, did that lead to finding this alleged offender?
Look, I think from what this gentleman told detectives, he was expecting to be visited, and we're assuming that the great media support that we've had in regard to this investigation and has built up over time, and and this guy's as a result has decided to come forward.
Is there any idea of whether Erica has been at this place in Coranda and that was where she may have been assaulted and then taken to Freshwater?
Look, that's part of the matter that will be material that we put before the court, and I can't say too much at this stage.
But they were known to each other in some way?
Look, I can't probably comment on that either at this stage.
I know it's kind of rephrasing what you said, but obviously I would imagine that it sounds like the public have helped you in your investigation here. Is that the case?
Look, the investigation has received a lot of community support and information, which we've followed. Obviously, it's been a protracted investigation, and we've been assisted by the media in putting various pieces of information out there, and we believe that has had an impact on this particular person.
Is this case any different to others in the fact that the reaction that you've had from the community?
Look, yeah, it depends on, you know, what people actually know, and we've had a fair bit of support from the community in relation to this, and we thank all those people who've come forward with information. Every bit of information that is brought forward to us is followed up, and we follow all those things out as part of the investigation. So,
what was the murder weapon?
I can't tell you that at this stage.
Are you still looking for anyone else? Is he the only person that was a suspect in this?
At this stage, we're not looking for anyone else.
And do you think that, just to get this clear, is his house at Caranda, is that believed to be where she was killed? Or are you looking, or is there another primary scene other than the bus stop?
Look, the address at Caranda is considered probably the primary crime scene.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add, Inspector?
No, other than to thank or acknowledge the work of the detectives that were involved in this matter. They were homicide squad detectives from Brisbane plus Cairns CIB detectives, and they've been working flat out for the last 5 weeks putting this together. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of information, so it's been hard work, and we've been supported by the media, and we thank you for that as well.
Have you spoken to the Liddy family since this has happened?
Yes, detectives did contact the Liddy family yesterday. I'm not familiar with what that conversation was. I know that they have made the family aware, though, of this outcome.
Do you know whether the family knew him at all?
No, I'm not aware of that.
So at the moment we think that she's an innocent girl out in the streets and somehow she's been picked up and taken to Caranda and murdered?
Look, I can't probably extrapolate any further than the information I've already given you.
Mueller went on to tell police that he had encountered Eric in Cairns late that night. According to his statement, she had no place to stay, and he offered her a lift and a place to sleep. He claimed he took her back to his property in Caranda, a remote and heavily forested area with few neighbours. There, he said, the two had been drinking. At some point during the night, they began to argue. Mueller told police that the situation escalated. He admitted to striking Erica and stabbing her below the eye with a butter knife. He said she lost consciousness and did not wake up. Instead of calling for help immediately, Mueller said he panicked. He waited several hours, then decided to drive her back toward Cairns. He stopped at a bus shelter in the suburb of Freshwater, placed her on the bench, and left her there, unconscious. He then walked to a nearby payphone, placed the 000 call that had launched the investigation, and quietly disappeared. Investigators were cautious, but began to corroborate elements of his story. The timeline he provided aligned with known facts. Erica's last sighting in Cairns, the distance between his home and the bus stop, and the estimated time of the emergency call. What had once been a confusing and stalled investigation suddenly had clarity. But what police found at Mueller's home raised new questions about the man they were now dealing with. Police executed a search warrant on Andreas Mueller's property in Caranda. The house sat on an isolated block surrounded by dense rainforest, quiet, private, and far from the city. What they found inside left a lasting impression. The home was filled with bird skeletons. There were bones mounted on boards and glass jars containing preserved remains. Some specimens were displayed on shelves, others hung from the ceiling or lay scattered across tables. The collection appeared to be extensive, and it was clear that Mueller had been gathering and preserving birds for years. Detectives described the space as bizarre and unsettling. There was no indication that the birds were linked to any criminal activity, and the collection itself wasn't illegal, but it added an eerie layer to the case. The meticulous arrangement of bones, the sheer volume of preserved remains, and the dark, claustrophobic atmosphere of the home all contributed to a sense of unease. Neighbors, when later interviewed, described Mueller as quiet and reclusive. He had lived in the area for some time, kept to himself, and worked as a local taxi driver. There had been no previous reports of violence or concern, but inside that house, investigators now knew, was where Erica Liddy had spent the final hours of her life. Following his confession, Andreas Mueller was formally arrested and charged with the murder of Erica Liddy. Mueller, a 52-year-old man, originally from Germany, had been living in far north Queensland. He was working as a taxi driver at the time of Erica's death, a job that gave him access to late-night fares and isolated areas. Despite his quiet presence in the community, there had been little known about his private life until the investigation exposed his connection to the crime. After his arrest, Mueller was remanded in custody. The evidence, his confession, the timeline of events, and the forensic findings were strong enough that a trial seemed unlikely. In October 2012, more than a year after Erica's death, Mueller entered a guilty plea in the Supreme Court. He admitted to causing Erica's fatal injuries and to failing to seek help while she lay unconscious. Instead, he had driven her from his isolated property, placed her on a public bench, and left her without support. During sentencing, the court heard that Erica had suffered both blunt force trauma and a stab wound beneath the eye. The judge described Mueller's actions as cold and callous, especially his decision to delay medical assistance for several hours. That delay, the court noted, contributed directly to her death. Mueller was sentenced to life imprisonment, as required under Queensland law for a conviction of murder. No minimum non-parole period was specified during the hearing, but under state legislation, he would be required to serve at least 20 years before being eligible for parole consideration. For Erica's family, the sentence brought some measure of closure, but not peace. The loss of a daughter, a niece, a sister and a friend could never be undone by time served. Erica's family attended the sentencing and spoke publicly about their grief. Her aunt, Karen Liddy, described her as beautiful, talented and deeply loved by her family and community. She said the loss was devastating and that while the legal process had concluded, their pain would never fully heal. In the aftermath of the case, Erica's death became a solemn reminder of the risks faced by young Indigenous women who leave remote communities to pursue education, work or new beginnings in unfamiliar cities. Without strong support networks, safe housing, or access to reliable services, they can become vulnerable to exploitation, violence, and harm. Erica was only 21 years old. She had left Cowan hoping to build a better life in Cairns, a city that promised opportunity. Instead, she found herself isolated, unsupported, and ultimately in danger. Her death wasn't just tragic. It was preventable. The lack of early intervention, the long delay before help was sought, and the actions of one man combined to cut short a life that should have held so much promise.
We as the Liddy families feel frustrated that it hurts us deeply in our hearts that an innocent young woman who had a bright future ahead of her was taken from us. For the family of Erica, it's been a shock. Why without us thinking and knowing about unanswered questions which we would like to be heard. We tell our minds
Felon, true crime.